salespeople are advertisements that you can talk to. In a nutshell, they are the grease of the machine. You should never walk into the bank and ask, what house can I afford? Always be selling.
Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about something that grinds both of our gears. Ooh. And probably yours too. Salespeople.
Salespeople. So,
So
when I say the word, so-and-so, or yeah, there was a salesman, I feel like the image that gets conjured up in the mind of the of people is different a little bit, especially by maybe age. But I don't think there's a single positive impression of a salesperson.
Except maybe among other salespeople.
Which doesn't count because they're not people. Right. But I actually think that salespeople rank higher on the list of despicables than lawyers. And that's saying a lot.
Yes.
Maybe
I,
not as
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is it about salespeople that we don't like?
Well, they're always selling something. And nobody likes to be sold things except for when they do. I think it's that, well, I mean, the reputation they have is that they're liars.
Why is that?
Which I guess is still the popular reputation of attorneys, but, well, because the salesperson has immediate benefit of telling you a lie, which is getting your money and giving you some crap. I mean, like the epitome of what people hate about salespeople is the stereotype of the used car salesman.
Or the traveling salesman. Those are the two that come to my mind.
Yes. But so the used car salesman, of course, cars are complex machines. I mean, they're not the most complex machines, but they are relatively complex. And lots of things to go wrong with them. And lots of things to go wrong with them and create intermittent issues. Or issues that can be kind of patched, but not actually fixed. Mm-hmm. And so the reputation of the used car salesman is that he's going to sell you some junk that looks good while it's on the lot. He's going to take your money, you're going to leave, and then it'll break down a few miles down the road because it's a piece of junk.
Right.
And then the traveling salesman, people don't like the traveling salesman because he goes door to door and bothers you while you're at home trying to have a nice day to try to take some of your money.
And I feel like the modern version of the traveling salesman is the cold caller.
Yes.
Like if your phone rings, like, I'm suspicious when my phone rings between the hours of 5 and 7 p.m., the dinner hour. And that's a thing. Salespeople will try to catch you at dinner, you know, and sell you something. Yeah, hate it. But why salespeople? Why does the salesperson even exist?
Well, as somebody who once attempted to start a business and failed miserably... If you have a product or a service that you would like to sell, you're going to have to find people to sell it to. And the salespeople are the people who find those people and secure those deals.
Right. I think in a nutshell, they are the grease of the machine. Like, there's a bunch of products and services being made over here and a bunch of consumers over here. And someone needs to, and it's usually...
They're the middlemen.
Yeah,
they're the middlemen joining producers with consumers.
Exactly. And I think the problem is also, like, they essentially are a more hands-on version of what marketing is trying to fulfill, like direct sales to individuals. And I feel like especially for smaller businesses that struggle, like, good example... Every person who owns a business is arguably also a salesperson, but they don't get the same reputation because that's not their primary thing.
Right. Salespeople do not start businesses.
No.
Usually.
Usually. Well, you say that. I actually think there's a shocking overlap between the venture capitalist and the salesperson.
Yeah.
But that's maybe a more modern problem that requires some...
Do venture capitalists really start business, though?
Yes, and here's why. They start businesses to acquire other businesses, in a nutshell, I think.
Mm.
because it's all about the valuation. And their goal is not to start a bit. Like, I think salespeople are just an attaché to a much bigger problem, which I know is going to maybe be shocking to some of our listeners to hear us talking about capitalism this way, but it's not because we're ignorant to the problems that exist. I think, you know, we'll get to that. There is a whole system that does not seek to generate value, but instead generate the perception of value, which is tricky because value itself is subjective, right?
Yes.
But the difference is, if you and I wanted to make, let's just say you and I went into business and we're going to start keeping bees to make and sell honey. That is our business.
Sure.
The philosopher's honey pot or something, whatever. That sounds terrible, but like, whatever. If we both pool our resources and acquire bees and hives, and even if we employ people to, even if we're not the ones, I think, harvesting the honey. And I think this is where we differentiate from your average person who deplores capitalism, because in their mind, we are still evil because we're not actually out there harvesting the honey for ourselves, right? But even if we employ somebody and their job is to go make, you know, harvest the honey.
Go do the beekeeping things, yeah.
Right. And then we get the honey and we sell it. That's fine in my mind. That's not who I'm describing as the problem. The problem is the person who does this with zero intention of ever, like, selling the honey is not the game. Selling the honey business is the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you and I are going to put money in to start a honey business for the intent purpose of selling it for more than we've put into it. And this is why I think VCs, venture capitalists, are kind of salespeople, because they do this kind of thing. They're putting money in businesses not because they genuinely think the business has value to bring to the world.
They just think they can find an even richer sucker.
Exactly. That will buy it later. And I think this is why they hover around tech in particular, because it's just,
nobody understands tech and it's easy to find suckers.
Well, because it's like selling and buying book rights with extra steps, essentially, because it's intellectual property, all of it. No one cares about buying the building that the tech company operates out of, or even the development resources at the. It's all about the brand and the intellectual property. That's what's really being bought and sold. And it's also what makes software companies so hard to valuate. Like, if you and I wanted to get a loan from a bank to start a software company, there's not a formula to use. It's so all over the place to figure out, well, how much. You know, if we go ask for $2 million to start a software company, the bank's going to go, because the bank doesn't want to lend you not enough money to really start the business, but they also don't want to lend you too much money to start a risky business.
Mm-hmm.
But their calculations for how do you even lend the money to do that is so all over the place that it's just too risky. And this kind of creates a space for the venture capitalists who are all out there to be risky. Because the other thing to keep in mind is that most venture capitalists aren't gambling their money. They're gambling rich people's money, who are just trying to get even richer, and they're playing in the giant, you know,
right,
casino that is the stock market.
They're pulling the slot machine lever, yeah.
Right. So salespeople are also this problem, but they exist in both worlds. Like, I think most people, like, if you were to ask a salesperson, what do you do, right? How do you think a salesperson would answer what it is that they do?
It depends on what kind of salesperson they are.
Okay.
So, for instance, a car salesman. Well, I talk to everyone who shows up at the dealership and try to get them to buy a car and upsell them on various, you know, like, perk packages that we have, or like higher model like vehicle packages, things like that. That's a fairly straightforward sales job.
Okay. But I think that the key thing that all salespeople tell you they do is they try to help. I think the answer you would get from a salesperson is, well, I try to help people get what they need.
Yes, that is a very salesman type response.
For example, I happen to know a car salesman who, his favorite thing when you ask him, what do you do? He said he puts dreams in driveways. For example, It's not about the sale.
I already want to punch this guy.
Yeah, it's not about selling the car. It's not about you giving me the money. It's about you getting your dream car. Mm-hmm. And me, and to be fair to him, he's not wrong. Salespeople will go to any lengths to make commissions. Because that's how most salespeople get paid. Yes. So I think
that's a very natural pay scheme for a salesman.
Yeah. And for, I guess for those
who... The more you sell, the more money you make. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess for those who don't actually know what that means...
You get a percentage of the sale.
Right. So if a car salesman might make 5% of the total sale price of the car, and the dealership's more than happy to pay them that 5% up front because they're going to collect the monthly payments, especially if they in-house finance it for the rest of the term of the car. Salesperson doesn't care about that. And salespeople actually function a lot like waiters in that way, where salespeople make shockingly little money if they don't do their job. It's a bit more objective than a waiter or a waitress because the person deciding how much you should make is not the customer, it's the owner. Mm-hmm. Although that actually would be kind of funny and interesting. Imagine being a car dealership who hires salespeople and says, well, you're going to make, and they say, well, what's my commissions? The client, the person you sell the car to can put any number they want.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that. Like, that would be funny, I think. Because, granted, no one would take the job because they're like, well, no one's going to give me crap, you know?
Yeah, because nobody likes salespeople.
Right. But that's why salespeople are often incentivized to do... And this is why I think people don't like them as well, is if the salesperson is intentionally withholding knowledge from you, and that's their literal job, that's their job to them, not their job from the dealer. The dealer doesn't actually care if they sell the car at the dealer's margin, right? So the dealer may look at it and say, okay, well, we need to sell cars for 10% more than we bought them, because that's how much, you know, that's what it takes to cover our expenses and make the profit margin that we want. So they tell the salespeople the lowest amount you can sell this $10,000 car is $11,000, and you will make zero commissions if you sell it for that. But if you can sell it for more than that, and there's usually a lot of complications involved in this, as I'm grossly oversimplifying it, but in a nutshell, there's some kind of formula out there that the salesperson knows by heart, and they can punch their number they sold the car for and get out how much they're going to make. But in general, the more they sell it for, the more they make. Now, the way that relationship works is nonlinear. Typically, you know, if they sell the car for $20,000, they don't make 50% commission on all of that additional $9,000 they sold the car for. Mm-hmm. It's usually like you make like 10% commission for the first 5,000 extra you made. And then any dollar beyond that, you make 15, and then any dollar above that, you know, it's to the point where the dealer is going to still recoup a lot of the money for them overselling.
Mm-hmm.
But the salesperson knows what this is. The salesperson knows exactly how much they can sell the car for, the minimum number. And when you ask them how much is the car, they're not going to tell you. They're going to tell you, well, the sticker, which by the way is usually already like double or something what it's actually worth. They're going to tell you that, and that's the starting point, because that's the number they want to make. And then it's a negotiation between you and them. And I think the other reason people tend to not like them is that if your whole job is negotiating, you're probably going to end up being really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, and the odds are stacked in your favor.
Exactly.
Because you have hidden knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So all of those things compound together to make you really hate that salesperson. And any good salesperson will distract from that reality as much as they can. I.e., oh, I don't sell cars. I put dreams in driveways. I am helping you get what you want. I've heard,
there's a degree to which they actually do that.
Because they also probably know more about cars than you.
Yeah, especially the ones that are available at that dealership.
Exactly.
Right. And I don't have much experience doing this. I don't buy cars very often. But, you know, I appreciate if I walk into a store of a particular niche or something like that, and I don't really know what I'm looking at, to go find a salesperson and be like, okay, here's what I want to do. Show me what you think I should get for that.
Yeah. A good example is like if you go into a hardware store and you can tell the person at the hardware store, I'm trying to install a fence. What do I need to do that? Now, these people do not install fences for a living, but they probably are close enough to the equipment and the materials needed that they could probably tell you, like, well, you're going to want an auger. Like, you know, you can use an auger to dig the holes. You're going to need concrete to solidify the posts. You're going to need these brackets to put on the wood because you don't want to put the wood in the concrete. You're going to need lumber. And this is, you know, and then when it comes to like, okay, what kind of lumber? Like, well, it's going to be outdoors, right? Yeah, well, you need treated lumber. You don't need, I know this lumber over here is cheaper, but here's the reason you want to pay more money is because this is not going to bend and warp with the weather, you know, like, and they can be very helpful in that way. But it's at this continuum of like, at what point are they being helpful and at what point are they upselling me? And you don't have the information to verify it usually. Now, don't get me wrong. I think the internet is one of the biggest enemies of the salesperson because like me, and I'm assuming you, if you wanted to buy a car, are you going to go to the dealership and ask the salesperson which car you should get based on the needs you have? Probably not.
Even if I do. Right. Even if I'm like, okay, I really trust this manufacturer, so I'm going to go to this manufacturer dealer and ask them what they think. But I'm not going to buy the car that day, right? Mm-mm. Like, okay, I would trust the salesperson to be like, okay, I'm looking at, or maybe I have like two that I care about, right? Okay, tell me the important differences between these two and what do you hear from your customers or whatever. But I'm not going to sign anything that day. I'm leaving and then I'm going to go do more research. Yeah,
exactly. And you can also probably, and this is, I think, the biggest enemy, you can just see how much they cost at other of same manufacturer dealerships.
Right.
And now they're competing with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think the heyday for salespeople was the vacuum cleaner salesman days. Now, I did not live through this time period. Neither did you.
No.
But there was a time, I know this may be hard to believe, when vacuum cleaners were magic. Like they were some kind of esoteric technology that revolutionized homes. And they were expensive, like very expensive. And there were serious differences in the different kinds there were. And most people had no idea how they worked because it's like, I don't get, this is a magical device that can somehow just pick up the things I want by sucking it up. Crazy. I know. And a vacuum cleaner was seen as a lifetime purchase. Like it was seen like a fridge. It was a lifetime home appliance.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it wasn't an appliance like those things where, you know, there's a reason people don't buy fridges that only last a couple of years. It's a hassle to get a fridge, to ship a fridge, to install a fridge and move all your crap between fridges. It sucks. That's the main reason I think people realized early on these things just need to work forever. And on the one hand, we see.
Well, the thing about fridges is that that kind of standard has been set, right?
Right.
That fridges, well, okay. And I think it was set by that they were originally made back in the days when everything was built like a tank and they hadn't figured out planned obsolescence yet.
Yeah.
And now everyone expects their fridge to last as long as their house.
Right. And vacuum cleaners were the same way. But they were small enough that a guy could put a couple of them in the back of his car and tote them around and try to sell them to you. Good luck doing that with a fridge, right? And that was the heyday because you probably, and because vacuum cleaner manufacturers weren't keen on, because remember, they are expensive at this time. They didn't want to just send them out to a bunch of appliance stores and have them just sitting out there yet. It was actually a lot cheaper and to let the salespeople serve also as the distribution network. Get a, you know, if you wanted to sell vacuums, it's cool. You essentially are going to buy these vacuums from us at the salesperson rate, and then you go sell them for however much you want, and you're going to drive around and sell them. And people took that up. It was almost MLM, like multi-level marketing, almost is how it was, except
it wasn't multi-level.
Right, because you're not selling a person five vacuums, and then if you sell four of them to your friends.
Yeah, like, you're not recruiting other vacuum cleaner salespeople. You're just driving around with a truck full of vacuums and trying to sell them.
Right. It's 2LM, two-level marketing.
Well, yeah, the big difference between this and MLM is that the vacuum cleaner salesman actually had a product to sell.
That was a value and actually improved people's lives, unlike essential oils at me. But yeah, so that was the heyday because there was no frame of reference for a vacuum. It was right in that sweet spot of they were heavy and hard and complex to ship at the time and expensive. You really didn't want to buy something through the catalog that expensive and then trust it's going to get there in good one piece.
Right, that gets filtered through the salesman.
Right.
The salesman's not going to show up with a broken one.
Right.
He's going to go back to the manufacturer and get that replaced. But you don't have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. And so you really don't have a good way to price compare them. And it has instantly demonstrable value. Like the day of the sales guy would
watch me plug this in and clean a section of your carpet real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at how dirty your carpet was. And now
you can see the side by side difference.
Yeah. And it was at right in the time of American history where the baby boomers were in full swing. The war was over. Right. And, you know, there's plenty of cash flowing around and there's also plenty of unemployed women now at home all day that, no offense, ladies, they could get suckered into spending the hard earned family money on a vacuum because it does actually make our life a lot easier because she's not having to like somehow sweep carpet. I actually don't know how you would clean carpet. I guess rugs were a thing before then.
I have no idea. Yeah, I'm certain that carpet in houses became more popular immediately after the vacuum cleaner, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know how you clean carpet without a vacuum cleaner.
Right. But yeah, so that I think that in my mind is like the heyday of the salesman of like you could actually, so much so that in, I think in the UK, they don't call them vacuum cleaners. They call them Hoovers.
Right. Named after a particular brand.
But yeah, because the salespeople, it was such a hot thing to be a traveling salesman selling Hoover vacuums in the UK that were made in America at the time. Because again, post-war, we were the only ones that had the industrial capacity to make a luxury item, which is essentially what it is, you know? So yeah, salespeople. In an ideal world, okay, this is another thing. I think salespeople also propagate the need for salespeople. Like, hear me out. If I need, and nowadays I think most salesmen, there's like two levels. There's the sales representative at like, there's the sales associate, which this is essentially a fancy name for a chain store clerk.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that if you go into Best Buy, will run at you with a blue or yellow shirt on. And ask you every 10 minutes, do you need any help? Because they also make commissions, by the way. You can tell whether or not people working at the store make commissions.
Based on whether they approach you and ask to do work.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're getting paid by the hour.
If you walk into Walmart, no one's walking up to you and asking you if you need help.
Right.
No, I'm stocking shelves. Yet. You can figure it out. There's a giant sign.
In fact,
sign.
They will just deliberately get in your way sometimes because they don't care about your customer experience. Yeah, because they're not getting paid for that. They're getting paid to put stuff on shelves.
Right. So some, you know, there's the store clerk, which is not a salesperson, and you can tell because they will not talk to you. They may actually go out of their way to avoid talking to you. Then you have the sales associate, which is usually, I think the place you find these folks the most are electronic stores, like cell phone outlets.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to any, well, there's like three options, I think, three or four. There's like T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T. I think those are the four options. Cricket used to be a thing. I don't know. There's a handful.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it just doesn't matter. But if you go into this very specialized store, there's going to be a bunch of gadgetry everywhere, and there's going to be a guy walking around with an iPad and a collared shirt trying to sell you up on the next newest iPhone because they make commissions, you know. But, these aren't the problem. I think the place you also see salespeople the most, the true salespeople, are in businesses. Business-to-business sales is huge. And personally, these are the ones I hate the most because they're still playing that same old game. And these are the people responsible for absolutely inundating your inbox with crap that you don't want. Because to them, it's all about conversions. Impressions to conversions to sales. You know, that's the pipeline. You use marketing to get impressions, then you use salespeople to convert impressions to sales, and then that's the pipeline. And it's deeper than that. I'm not an expert, but But because we are so inundated with information, and you could Google anything you want, because there's so much of this sales going on, it means that if you're not playing that game, you're going to lose. So you have to hire a salesperson to compete.
Yes.
Almost. And that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Gone are the days, really, of your reputation just being enough, you know. And don't get me wrong, that kind of still exists, but a lot of it's legacy. You know what I mean? Like, why? Like, for example, I don't actually see ads for, like, Eddie Bauer clothing, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. It's great clothing. They make good, hearty leather clothing, and amongst other things, you know, like Bose speakers. You don't really see a ton of ads, maybe some.
There's some, yeah.
But generally, but they may come in like catalogs for specific niche things, maybe, or they're attached to something else. But like that is a brand that is known by its quality. Like it's, they're expensive, but you know what you're paying for. Like they're not negotiating.
Unless you're an audio guy.
Exactly. They are the non-audiophile's best headphones, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to go down that tangent.
Even though they're more expensive than better headphones, but anyway.
Sure, but that's what you're paying for. That's the price of ignorance. Is like, I'm just going to buy these Bose because I know they're going to work. And they're going to sound great to me. And they will. And they're going to hold up pretty well for you doing stupid stuff with your headphones.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But yeah, a lot of these companies have just existed for a long time. And I think it's kind of hard to break into that space without having salespeople or like really hyped up marketing campaigns that's all meme based and getting TikTok influencers to buy your crap, just to hawk your crap for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in a way, maybe influencers could be a death knell for the salespeople because everyone knows the salespeople now. Like they know, you know when you're kind of talking to a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another interesting thing. Salespeople actually, what do you think makes someone good at sales? Let's go down this pipe. What makes a good salesperson? Or like, have you noticed a common trait that people who tend to be very successful in sales have? Or like, what common traits do all salespeople tend to share besides the fact that they do sales?
I'm not entirely sure what you're getting at.
There's one thing that I've noticed. The divorce rate of salespeople.
Uh-huh.
I'm pulling up numbers because I want to make sure I'm not talking out of my rear here. okay. It's higher. I'm looking for a statistic. This doesn't have a hard statistic in it. But the reasons given, I'm going to assert that it's noticeably higher. I don't want to waste time looking for a statistic because this is actually a funny article.
Okay.
That was clearly written by a salesperson. And the reasons given as to why salespeople think they get divorced more than average is because, quote, sales is not a job where you work 9 to 5. As is evidenced by the phrase, always be selling.
Mm-hmm.
You can't turn it off.
Yeah, I was going to make that comment earlier when you were talking about your car salesman friend.
Oh yeah,
you know, giving you the salesperson line about what his job even is.
Yeah, while we're trying to hang out and watch a football game.
Yeah, he's already trying to sell you a car even though you're not at the dealership.
Yeah. Quote, our spouses really don't understand our passion.
Oh no. No. You don't have a passion.
Quote, it's not just a job. It's a way of life, a calling, an itch we must scratch.
Yeah, money.
Well, I think it's both. I think it's money. This is what I would say. I do actually think that there is a strong overlap between people who others may... What does it mean to be charismatic, actually? What is the point of charisma? It's not just making people happy and want to be around you, right? Although that's one aspect of it. I mean,
there is that.
There is that. But like, what really is charisma from a Machiavellian perspective?
You're like believable.
And you can just get people to do what you want.
Well, yeah, I guess that's it.
That's ultimately it. You're a convincer. And so a good salesperson that's also charismatic exercises that charisma to just get people to do what they want. And I don't think that's a good recipe for a marriage, like, frankly. That's manipulative. And I think you kind of have to be.
I guess you could also, you could also argue that salespeople are already used to lying all day about them for their jobs, about what the products they're selling. So they're going to lie about themselves, too, on the first few dates.
Right.
And and make something work that ultimately was never a recipe for success to begin with.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, that's kind of their job description. Your goal is to, like, any good salespeople, like, if someone wants to buy your product, you don't need a salesperson.
Right.
Like, no one hires salespeople to find people who don't know about the product, really. That's part of it, maybe.
Right. That's the realm of advertising.
Right.
Which is kind of the same thing, but not really.
It's that's the impressions part of the pipeline.
Yes. Salespeople are advertisements that you can talk to.
Well, they're they are. But they're dynamic in the moment and can try to convince you harder than an ad could.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But yeah, any company who's established that everybody knows about Chevrolet, the truck and car, the vehicle manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
Like a rock, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the advertising.
I thought that was Ford.
No, that's Chevy.
Well, clearly they didn't do a good enough job with the advertising for me to associate that with the right brand.
Yeah. Well, how much TV do you watch?
Not much.
There you go. Like,
but I've seen some car ads.
Yeah. I distinctly remember that Like a Rock, Bruce Springsteen song.
Bob Seger,
whichever one. It's same. What's the difference?
They're both BS.
Bob Springsteen, Bruce Miller, whichever one. you're correct about that. But yeah, the goal of hiring a salespeople is to get people who are on the fence over the fence. It's to convert the people who are, I know about Chevy, I should go check that dealership out. Like, the ads to get you to go, the ads are funnels to get you to the salesperson a lot of the time. You know, the salesperson is there to just to take a person who is on the fence and wouldn't buy a car and turn their head in the direction of buying the car. Like, it's an inherently manipulative profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that by the same thing that this person had to say about, they just don't get our passion, it's an itch, I think there's a psychological element of people like that who are rewarded for doing that. Part of it is the high of doing it, like the closing, like the close. You know what I mean? Like, if you know enough salespeople, I feel like a lot of them will talk about, you know, closing the deal.
Mm-hmm.
There are movies, I think, about this to some degree. Like, The Wolf of Wall Street's one that comes to mind, because hear me out, brokers in that age are also just salespeople, because on the one hand, a broker is, I have a license to trade stocks for people, so I'll trade it for you because you physically can't be at the stock exchange and you may not have a medallion or whatever it needs to get on the floor and actually walk up to someone and make a trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than that. They, especially in that movie, the way it's portrayed, it's, I'm making money coming and going, facilitating the sale. So I'm going to get people to buy these penny stocks and stuff, right? And they love the feeling of suckering people. Like, it makes them feel powerful, I think, in some degree, which I get it, right? Getting one over, if you view every human interaction as like a, I also think there's a strong overlap between these people and the alpha male kind of mentality folks.
Oh, I was going to say psychopaths, but
same. I mean, really. But yeah, arguably, psychopaths make great salespeople because they view life as a game in the way where it's me.
People are resources that I can
exploit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mechanism of exploitation in this case is selling.
Right.
So that's what I'm going to do. And that's inherently rewarding in a very strict hierarchical competitive sense. And that's why I think salespeople get up in the morning. It has nothing to do with, I mean, don't get me wrong, the money's probably nice, you know, but that money's not guaranteed like it is in any other job. You can't just get up and show up and make money. It's about what you do on the day to day. And I think the people that end up thriving in that, that end up pushing that and mentoring other people into that, that's what it's all about, is this manipulation. And only those who end up being, I think most people would end up feeling kind of guilty about it. Like, I think most people, if you try to get a job in sales, would feel terrible because most people are baseline, I think, somewhat ethical. You'd feel horrible knowingly lying to someone and selling them a car that's worth way more than what you know they could get it for. You'd feel bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's you would win, it doesn't feel right to win that way. It feels unfair. But salespeople think it's perfectly fair. It's doggy dog out there. You know, it's all about me. And if you look at how salespeople compete with each other, you know, like there's nothing a salesperson hates than another salesperson. They're like cats, yes. You know? Yeah, it's terrible. But I guess this is the part where we normally get to know some what do about topic. Like
salespeople are not going anywhere.
They're not, unfortunately, because they do actually serve a purpose. And hear me out. They exist anywhere trade does, be it capitalist or otherwise. You know, they exist. Because at the end of the day, most of us don't want to do it. Even if you're good at something, like if your passion in life is to make boutique, you know, toothpick furniture, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there's a market for that, you're going
to... Your passion is making the thing, though, not selling it to people, finding the people who want it.
Right. And even if you can put controls on your salesperson to make them not that way, pay them just a salary, which, by the way, that's also kind of hard to do because there's a lot of factors that affect whether or not a sale happens.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as salespeople like to believe it's all them, I mean, frankly, sometimes a fat cat walks in the door that's like, you know what? I'll buy that coffee table for $28,000.
Right. I'm here to spend money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm here to swing my wallet around and impress, you know, whoever.
Somebody. Maybe myself.
I am particularly impressed with myself, actually. You know. But yeah, you need somebody to facilitate. And don't get me wrong, I think that the internet also kind of helps provide this. There's a growing place for niches, you know. Places like Etsy are a great example. Have you ever been on that website?
Yes.
What's that site all about?
So Etsy is, yeah, it's an online web storefront for, it's basically like an online flea market, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so people will just have their own Etsy pages where they sell usually their own like homemade goods.
It's
not always like that, but essentially, yeah.
It's like a folksy eBay.
Yes. Well, but okay, normally I associate eBay with like one-off sales, like I just need to get rid of this and I'm going to go to an online listing to put this up for auction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or for sale. But Etsy, you have a storefront, right? So you actually have like a catalog of the products that you make, usually.
Yeah.
Like sometimes there might be unique stuff that you're doing. You'll never be able to do that again. But normally it's like a product line of some sort.
Yeah, like you can take orders.
Even if you don't think of it that way. But yeah, you take orders. And even when you run out of stuff, you still leave it in the catalog and plan to restock it later.
Right. Yeah. And it's usually like little weird boutique things that obviously you don't see a lot of mass produced goods on Etsy, really.
No.
Or if you do, it's like they're discontinued and that person just happens to have a lot of that inventory. Maybe.
The closest thing I've ever seen on Etsy to like a mass produced thing is a little boutique company that makes notebooks for fountain pens.
Of course you do.
Yes.
Of course you know about that.
Of course I do. Yeah, so that's the closest that I can think of to that. But basically, or I guess like prints of photographs.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of like that.
You know, something you could just go to Walgreens and get or whatever, a pharmacy. Can we tangent about pharmacies for 2 seconds?
Okay.
What is a pharmacy anymore? Like, oh my God. Like, I know pharmacies have always been weird. Like,
well, yeah. Because even back in the day, you would go to the drugstore to get
candy.
Candy or lunch, like a burger and fries.
Yeah. Oh, God. Like,
well, I guess it's, yeah, people are getting sick all the time. But if you want to have return customers coming back all the time, you got to have something else for them to get.
Yeah. Like fudge or whatever.
Or like, or I guess to maybe to distinguish yourself from the other drugstores, right? Because if everyone's just selling the same mass-produced drugs, then there's nothing to differentiate your store from the next one. But my store has candy or a fountain or whatever. Then yeah, I can bring people or greeting cards or other things that people don't need
that often. It's like a general store that also happens to sell prescription drugs.
Right.
Such a weird business.
It's like
model.
The restaurant that serves alcohol. It's it's like, well, we could be a bar, but we don't want to be a bar, so we're going to be a restaurant that has alcohol instead. It's the same. It's the same thing.
We want to close before 3 a.m. or whatever, and like, you know,
right.
Yeah, it's, anyway, that's, get it together, pharmacies. Like, when can we get rid of pharmacies? Can that become a mailed service? Because, I, please.
There are folks trying to make that happen.
Oh, I will aid, because that needs to happen, because it's like, well, it's funny too, because big department stores often will have pharmacies now. It's like, it's weird to me that pharmacies outside of, like, big chain pharmacies still exist. And like that there's such a thing as the pharmacist who goes into business. I mean, don't be wrong, good for them, I guess. But it's weird. Anyway, that's a tangent about pharmacies. This is not a very coherent episode, but that's okay. Neither are salespeople. But there we go, back on topic. But yeah, I think the internet is gonna keep doing what it's done to salespeople for a long time. Which is just they've largely vanished from the day-to-day. Like, you still see them at car dealerships, for example, but not, there are people trying to change that. You know, there are online, like, Tesla is a great example, and Carvana are two companies that are good examples that don't just, they just don't have salespeople. They don't have that overhead. And it kind of makes sense. A car is a big enough thing that if it has a good enough reputation, it's like, I could actually foresee myself ordering one of these now. Like, and we as a, at least in the West, are way more comfortable just placing orders than we've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there used to be this big distrust because you didn't, like, Sears and Roebuck, for example, the first big catalog that went out like that, that was just for the general public, lived on its reputation of, well, no, but you can mail us a check and we'll, or cash, and we'll actually just send you the thing that you want to your house. We'll actually just do that. We won't just take the money and run. You know, we're an established business that you can sue, you can seek recourse. We're not just some guy, right? And it's not so much money that it's like, yeah, I can get away with it. You know, I think we're way more comfortable than we've ever been just saying, I'm going to buy this sight unseen, or the product photos are good enough. And that's a fun, weird thing. Like, we've just gotten, I feel like there's this weird barometer of, we know the product photos are going to be way better than the reality.
Yeah.
But we can offset it enough to go, it's still a good purchase, though, knowing what it's probably going to really look like. You know, like when you go to McDonald's, you don't expect your double quarter pounder to look like the ad.
There's an ongoing lawsuit about that, by the way. But anyway, that's not the topic of this episode.
It's not the topic of this episode. You know, but it's like, but it's going to be close enough. I've had it enough times that I still want the thing I know I'm going to get that, you know, that would be nice, but I know what I'm going to get. Like, I think that's a big contributing factor. I think they'll always exist in some form, maybe. It's going to be hard to see how this works, though, in the business-to-business realm. Like, businesses aren't prepared to make huge purchases like that mm-hmm. yet. You know, like, say your company is trying to buy a software solution for some problem.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, especially with stuff like software, yeah, you can't really do that anyway. Like, okay, there do exist software products that you can just buy and use, but businesses have special needs that usually aren't fully covered by off-the-shelf, so to speak, stuff like that. So they're always going to need someone to deal with anyway.
Despite Microsoft's efforts to make Excel a programming language, you know?
Yeah.
And
they have done it, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done a shockingly good job of building this one size.
People have done 3D graphics in Excel, which is insane.
Yeah. Ugh, God. I was just in my head, I'm working through like how you would even do that, and it hurts to think about.
It hurts me deep inside.
This is our Excel,
a colossal waste of time.
This is our Excel presentation tool. What? Oh, it's not just spreadsheets, my guy. We got 3D graphics. What? What? Yeah.
I need to see if the demo scene has found Microsoft Excel.
Oh, God.
What kind of Excel demos could there be?
Oh, no. There are game devs out there right now building games in Excel, the newest platform. Sorry.
It's not even new.
My game's only compatible on the most recent version of Excel. But yeah, I think they'll still exist in some capacity there. Unless we get to the point where, and this is, again, not about salespeople, but we've got the time, and so I'm fine tangenting on this because I don't think we would have time to make an actual episode that would be all about this.
Okay.
At what point does having someone who knows software become the same as just having an accountant? Like, all businesses need some form of an accountant, right?
Yeah.
Because it's just a fact of doing business. Do you think there will ever come a time when software developers or software in general would be seen the same way?
Oh, where just every company has a software developer of some kind?
If you're big enough or if you're small enough, you outsource to a small shop. Like, because there's accountants, like there's CPAs, for example, that have like a...
It's kind of going more in that direction, but I don't know. I don't think so.
I kind of wish it would, to be honest. I feel like that would be as a software engineer, I would love that to be a thing. I would love to be like, I don't want a license, but like...
Yeah, please no licenses.
Please no licenses or certifications. And it's like, oh yeah, well, we're just a little mom and pop software shop that writes little tools for your business, you know, or does whatever, maintains your website, you know. Even though it's weird, because I feel like software is trying to kill off those kinds of businesses as well, like building solutions that let you do your own accounting.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll kill off that in general. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I think businesses will always need some level of like custom service or thing that a salesperson is going to be out there hawking.
Well, yeah.
And also, I think so long as trading exists, like stocks, assets, you know, things like that, loans. Oh, that's the other place you see salespeople a lot. Loan officers at banks, low-key salespeople.
Yeah.
Actually.
So in the same way that you should not arrive at the car dealership and ask what car you should get, you should never walk into the bank and ask, what house can I afford?
Oh, God. No.
You were about to get screwed.
Yeah, hear me out. Okay.
Also, life pro tip. Whenever you are buying anything that you're going to require financing for, do not accept the paradigm of, what monthly payment are you comfortable with?
Yeah.
No. Figure out the total cost.
Yep.
And decide how much you are willing to spend on a thing.
Even though it's hard because it's not money you have now.
You can still do the math. Because obviously, yes, it's going to come down to what are you able to fit into your income, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you probably have a monthly payment number in mind. But never tell the salesperson or loan officer that.
Because they
don't ever reveal that number, because they will figure out how to make you pay that payment for forever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's talk about another thing that's sad to see go that way. It sucks that everything is loan officers just punch the numbers in and the computer. Computer says no. Yeah. It's like the car salesman almost, but the computer fetches the number. It's like, yeah, this is like the monthly payment to get them to this. Is like, I would not be surprised if you could see on the other side of the loan officer's screen them type in your details that you just gave to them, and it just spits out two numbers. This is the lowest monthly payment you can get them to that we can offer, and this is the highest monthly. This is the monthly payment you should target. Or it may not even tell that person, actually, now that I think about it. I think it's entirely possible that they are salespeople that actually don't know how low it can go, but because everyone does it that way, Well,
the thing with the loan officers is that they'll just try to get you to buy more house than you can afford. That's the thing.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is, like, if I walked in and said, this is my income, and they run my credit score, the computer's going to spit out a number saying, this is the total amount they can buy, and this is the rate they can do it at, the monthly payment. But it obfuscates the question of, like, but could I not get a different monthly payment and pay it off, a cheaper house faster? It doesn't even bother doing that. So it's like a weird place where, because everyone does that, it's just like a competition of the algorithms, which I would not even be surprised if they're all the same and they don't come directly from the credit bureaus anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The credit bureau just decides, like, well, this is the safest thing for your risk level, and the banks don't deviate from it. And so you'll end up with like three of the almost identical offers, really, because it's just so centralized now.
Yeah.
And I kind of lament that, because the nice thing about actually having a functioning, thinking loan officer human being that can just make that decision and be trusted to just make that decision is that they can consider factors that the algorithm probably isn't accounting for. You know, like, I know farmers in particular are particularly angry about this because it is really hard. They do not fit the algorithm well.
Mm-hmm.
They make no money, technically. And the way they make their money is so different depending on what they grow or cultivate, that it is, there's special people that just do farm financing through like a farm bureau that like weirdly like group negotiates this because they know about how it works, but the financial institution can't model it well. And the risks are just insane because it could just be a fact of reality that, oh, yeah, winters were particularly harsh. I made even less than $0 this year. Can't pay. Sorry. And no, you can't come get my farm because I'm never putting them on the line. At least farmers have gotten together and agreed that they're not doing that. It's not up for sale. You're going to give me a loan with no collateral, like, because I'm not putting the farm on for it. You know? But yeah, that sucks. It sucks that it's not even a salesperson that you can negotiate with. Because hear me out. I also feel like there are the upside, even though it's often never seen, of the salesperson person being there.
Mm-hmm.
They're down to make deals on stuff. Like, I also wish salespeople in some ways were more unlimited on what they could do. Like, can we do some kind of weird trade barter financing thing? Like, because if it's all about making the sale and they truly could do anything, then they would find a way to make it work, you know, but they don't, because they are not incentivized. They're so restrained in by the...
Yeah, they're chained to the computer. Yeah.
Yeah. And that sucks, because I get why it's like that, because you can take any moron that doesn't actually know how to work that complex deal and just shackle them to the computer and say...
Yeah, it's because you don't trust your own salesmen not to be suckers themselves.
Which, okay, that's a good point to probably end on. I work with salespeople. I work at a company that has salespeople, and I have had to work with them to help make a sale. And in working with them, one of them revealed some forbidden knowledge, I think, to me that just blew my mind. One day, one of them was like, was pitching something for us to buy all of a sudden. And we were like, what? Like, this is backwards. And the other salesperson was like, ah, it's because the person most likely to get suckered by a salesperson is another salesperson.
Mm.
Because they're so used to thinking about things from your perspective to craft the narrative that is necessary to get you suckered in, that it's like those pathways in their brain are so exercised that things can just slip through and it go the other way. Like, they almost have to create a mental pipeline that they're normally putting stuff in the output for, but it goes both ways.
They have
ways.
To believe their own BS.
Yeah.
And that makes them susceptible to believing other people's BS too.
Exactly.
Because they're all about the narrative.
Exactly. And that just blows my mind to think about. It's like, wow. It's their worst enemy is themselves, and that's just great. So if you ever think about it that way, you know, it's okay to hate salespeople, because I would imagine salespeople hate them too, you know. But yeah, I think that's all I have for this one.
A good note to end on.
All right, till next time, philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.